Welcome to Better Cybersecurity, the ISF podcast. I'm your host, Steve Durbin.
ISF CEO Steve Durbin is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, we bring you the second half of Emerging Threats 2026, the first episode of which we aired last year. In the previous episode, Steve outlined the threats and challenges that enterprises and business leaders will face in 2026 and beyond. Today, he answers questions from the audience. We'll get into artificial intelligence, supply chain and geopolitical challenges, corporate governance, risk and resilience, and more.
Thank you very much indeed for listening to that. What I'm going to do now is just move to taking some questions from you. As I say, if you're listening to this in playback, these are my details. Don't be afraid to fire across some questions to me. Challenge, disagree, all of that's good and leads to a much richer conversation. But I'm looking forward now to handling some of your questions. Okay, so see, I've got a lot of questions that have come in here already. I'm going to try and do them in the order of the threats that we spoke about. If I can manage that, it means I'm probably going to do some jiggling around, but never mind, we'll go with it. So first one that's come in here, this is on AI and emerging technologies. This is all the way from Canada. It must be quite early in the morning there, but thank you for joining me. Very nice to have you. This question is, you spoke about AI-powered adversarial threats, but what can we do from a security perspective about our own business demanding various new AI-powered tools to be implemented at pace? Really good question, that, because that's a very practical challenge that I think we're all facing. I would say a couple of things. I think what you have to have in place, and I'm making an assumption here, I'm assuming that you've got your AI governance, your AI process, your AI policies all up to date so that you know exactly what you have to do in order to make sure that an AI-powered tool is business ready. Now, if you haven't, then that's the starting point. You must have agreement from the very top of the organization on how you are going to manage data that's being fed into your AI engines. That should be reflected in the policies and the processes that you have. If you're an ISF member, then you will know that we produced quite a lot of information on that some months ago. Lee Munson is the person for you to talk to. He's based in London. Lee'd be very happy to talk about some of those things. And of course, we've got our new standard of good practice that's coming out in the springtime too, which is also going to have some AI coverage. But to the point, specifically, what can you do? Assuming you've got your policies and your processes in place, I would suggest you have an AI committee that actually approves or otherwise the way in which these tools are then implemented across the business. Why have a committee? Because that way you can pull in representatives from different parts. You can have security, you can have IT, you can have legal, and people from the mainline businesses. Everybody makes a decision based on very well-defined criteria, no comeback on any individual, and either it's approved or it isn't. So quite a lot of work to do in terms of the setup, but I know people that have done that, and they're also exceptionally busy. So do plan for it being a bit of a bumpy ride in the early days whilst you implement some of those things, because as you are finding out, the business is not at all patient when it comes to implementing some of those tools. Okay, second one here on AI, and then I'll move on to something else. This is an interesting one. Okay, is the AI bubble going to burst? And what does it mean in terms of security if it does? And what if it doesn't? If I could answer that with a degree of certainty, I'd probably be sitting on a beach somewhere, because I probably would have been able to have played the markets appropriately to get the most out of it. I don't think it's going to burst in the same way that some of the dot-coms did. I think there's a difference, in my mind anyway, around dot-com and AI bubble. So in the dot-coms, some of those wasn't much there. With AI, most of the organizations that are driving that growth are backed by significant organizations. There is real product that's being shipped. There is real data that is being used. Is it overpriced? I would say yes. Does that mean we're going to have a burst? I would hope not. I would hope we're going to see more of a market correction. What does it mean in terms of security if it does? I can't really say, because I think it depends on where you're using some of these AI tools from the AI vendors that are out there. So not a very satisfactory answer to that, I'm afraid, but probably the best I can do on that at the moment. Moving on, somebody here, we've gone to supplier and third-party security. This is from somebody in the UK. How do we manage risk from the extended supply chain, especially in regions with heightened geopolitical tensions? Really good question. Again, very practical. We know that people are trying to do this on a somewhat dynamic basis. It's all about risk management in the supply chain. Again, if you're an ISF member, I would recommend you use our supply chain tool. If you're not an ISF member, then a lot of what you need to do in here is good old-fashioned risk management. So you need to be understanding, I would say, how critical certain elements of the supply chain are. And when I talk about criticality of supply chain, I'm really looking back into where is your data flowing? What would be the impact on your data if that component of the supply chain wasn't available? And so again, as I said, I think in the main session there, protecting the crown jewels is a really good place to start in terms of assessing which element of data is the most important. You can then track where it is. You want to follow it through the supply chain, end to end, so that you can understand which third parties are critical to you. They could be very small. This is the thing about supplier assessment. In the old days, everybody used to look at it from the perspective of the biggest amount of revenue being spent. Now it's all about criticality of data. So you can have a very small supplier where you're not spending perhaps a huge amount of money, but if it's handling critical data, it needs to be right at the top of your list in terms of how you work with that. So how do you manage risk? In much the same way as you manage any other form of risk, understand where your data is flowing, understand the criticality of it, understand who's touching it, and make sure that those people who are touching that critical data have got the right level of safeguards in place to your satisfaction, not necessarily theirs. Let's move to nation-state threats and geopolitics. One here from Germany. How are security leaders and executives scenario planning for the onset of tariffs and embargoes similar to what happened in March 2025? Couple of elements to that question. The first is around the scenario planning. We have spent probably a large part of 2025 working with organizations all around the world, just playing out these different scenarios from a business management standpoint, from a security perspective, from a technology standpoint, really trying to make sure that the organization is best equipped to deal with these kinds of what-ifs. So I would recommend that if you aren't already doing that, you feed that into your business continuity planning or your simulation exercises. And the benefit of scenario planning is you can create a number of different scenarios that are appropriate for your business. There are lots of people out there who can help you do this. I would stay away from the ones that are going cookie cutter, that are just doing standard tabletop. That's not going to help you if you can't put your very specific twist on it. So it's worth spending the time and the money on making sure that you've got the right scenarios, the right facilitators, and that you're doing it regularly. So that's what I would say there. Another one in a similar sort of area, more about crime, actually. Cybercrime groups are growing in size and capability and gaining more state-level backing. What steps can organizations take to avoid getting caught out by these groups? I'm trying to think of a positive way of putting this. And the reason I'm pausing there is that the piece is, how do you get caught out? How do you avoid getting caught out? For me, that's not what's happening. If you happen to be on a list, if you happen to be an organization that has something that is exceptionally interesting or useful, then somebody will want that information. Somebody will want that data. What you have to do is make yourself look pretty unattractive. So it is about all of the tedious things that we don't like. It's about patching. It's about making sure that you're making it difficult for people to access your systems. It means that your monitoring is top of its game. You're doing all of the basics in the hope that some of those crime groups will move down the road and look at somebody else. But full well, if you happen to be critical infrastructure, I've talked a lot about that today, or somebody else who has some really interesting, some really tasty data, some of these groups are going to be coming for it. And at some point, you probably need to be practicing how you're going to respond, whether that be to a ransomware attack, whether it be to an outage. So again, make yourself look unattractive, rehearse for the day that you hope doesn't come, and keep up all of your basic cyber hygiene. Let's move on now to, a little bit of governance and oversight. So in terms of training, I quite like this one. In terms of training for the C-suite, what are the top three most important topics? Governance, AI, regulatory responsibility, or something else? I'm going to draw here on the knowledge that I pick up from some of the work that I do with Henley Business School in the UK. I suppose over the past years, what I've noticed with some of the C-suite that come through the board development program that we run there is that the needs have changed. So in the beginning, it was about trying to get an understanding of the importance of cyber. Most people have got that now. They understand it. Now it's about how do you better equip the C-suite? So governance is certainly one of those things. It comes very naturally. If you're a board member, you want to keep on top of what's happening from a governance standpoint. So that's a pretty easy win. The downside, of course, is that it does keep changing to a certain extent if you're looking at it from a regulatory point of view. Where I see the biggest need for help and assistance at the moment is probably in the AI space. For a lot of board directors that I talk to, they're still equating AI to ChatGPT. And as we know, it's not quite that simple. I wish it were. So really understanding the role that they have to play in determining where the data is, how it's being used, that whole risk component that I talked about earlier, that's certainly one of the areas that I know boards are looking for assistance in. And then the final one that I would put in there, maybe this one isn't so much for the board or the C-suite, but more for the security people listening in, is the metrics. You have to get the metrics right. They have to be appropriate for your business. So again, you need to be understanding what it is that the overall company strategy is, how cyber relates to that, and the role that security has to play in helping to deliver that. Put metrics around it that are easily to understand from a business standpoint, and then everybody's on the same page. So those would be the areas that I would look at. Another one on governance. So a bit of a longer one, this one. Leaders are facing even more unpredictable disruptions that have direct impact on business operations and the bottom line, from natural disasters to accidental cloud misconfigurations. How should these risks out of our control be shaping our resilience strategies as we move into next year? The interesting piece in this question for me is the bits that are out of your control. Out of control doesn't mean out of visibility, doesn't mean that you can't understand what some of those risks might be. I think there is a very real need for leaders to try to anticipate some of the unpredictable, which might be a bit of a contradiction in terms there. But this is really linked to that other point I was making about the scenarios. So you do want to try to come up with a range of different scenarios that help you to understand how robust and resilient your business operations are. And certainly I know that when we run these things at the ISF, we will very often throw in some complete wild cards just to test leaders and see how they respond. It's all very well playing it very nicely, but that's not what happens in the real world. When something goes very badly wrong, quite often it's something that you hadn't anticipated. So I would say, again, step up the challenge, the difficulty in the scenarios that you're using there. What else have we got in here? Oh, here we are. How do we continue to do business with China? They're a key supplier, but also a clear adversary to the West. A difficult one to answer that. I think for a very long time, we have been quite happy to make use of Chinese technology. So if you look at most, mobile phones, laptops, whatever it is, cars, doesn't matter. They're all using Chinese componentry. And whilst there may be something of a trend to try to bring some of that back onshore, for instance, in the United States, if you're able to do that, the challenge is that most of those components are out there and will have quite a long life out in the wild anyway. So to a certain extent, the genie is already out of the bottle. But the key piece here for me is all about risk management. So again, it's about looking very hard at what materials, what technology you're using, and how that is interacting or interfacing with your data. It may well be that what you want to do is to limit the amount of Chinese componentry, if you're able to, in some of the elements of technology that are handling very sensitive data. But again, and this has been something of a theme of this whole session, hasn't it? We keep coming back to the importance of data and about understanding where that is. It's a bit of a return to the old days of real information security, which was, how do you secure information? How do you secure data? So for me, it's about having a very good understanding of that, understanding what is critical to your business, understanding what you require to have for a minimum viable company, and making sure that is protected at all costs. And I would simply see China as being another risk that you would put into that overall process as you work through the risk management methodology and approach that you have within your organization. Oh, an interesting one down here. Oh, I like this one. This is, again, quite a long one, but so I'm a long-time listener of your podcasts and regularly read your articles. That's very kind. Podcast is actually entering its 10th year next year, so we've been going at it for quite some while, so very pleased that you're enjoying it. In your recent Security Week article, I noticed a shift in your perspective in the evolving threat landscape. You highlighted the industrialization of cybercrime and the rise of highly bespoke phishing attacks. Could you expand on what's driving these changes and what they mean for organizations preparing for the future? This, I think, if I remember correctly, was really me stepping back and taking a view on the way in which the world had changed. I talk about cybercrime quite a lot. Indeed, if you go back to the very beginning of the podcast, almost 9 years ago now, we did have some cybercriminals that came on, and we did delve into in quite some detail what they were up to, how they were doing things. And at that point in time, they were very highly organized. They were very collaborative, very cooperative. I think all of those things have stayed the same. I don't think that has changed. I think what has changed is the advent of improved technology that's available to them. So AI being the first thing that comes to mind when I say that. I think as well, crime as a service has developed and evolved even further. The industrialization, the professionalization, if you like, of cybercrime. What does all that mean for organizations who prepare for the future? I think it means that we have to be at the top of our game all the time. We have to be sharing information within our own industry groups. And indeed, we have to be implementing cross-industry working groups too, so that we are constantly staying one step ahead. The banks, if you think about it, are particularly good at this. The banks have always taken the view that an attack on one bank tends to be an attack on all banks. And so therefore, it's in everyone's best interest to maintain a high level of awareness as to what's going on. I think that to combat what we're seeing here, we're going to have to be doing very much more of that. And certainly if we are identifying new attacks or zero days, then spreading the information about that, what people need to be looking out for, I think that's going to be essential going forward. And also, if we're doing something that's particularly good that we find to be working, putting that out and sharing it with our community as well. I don't think, I hope, that when we talk about cyber, it still isn't a competitive advantage in the sense that it's going to prevent us sharing information with each other. I still like to think that there is a lot that we can do to make sure that from an industry standpoint, we're best equipped to deal with what is certainly an ever-growing threat. Okay, I'm conscious of the time here. I think I've got a couple of minutes left, so I'm see if I can pick off some very quick ones here. Okay, there's one here on nation states. Again, an interesting one. Not going to get into this too politically. Could get myself into all sorts of bother. But it's, do you see European allies moving away from US tech anytime soon? Anytime soon, I think the answer to that is no. Do I see them looking and exploring? Yes. I'm very aware of certain organizations and bodies that are looking at whether or not it's possible to reduce their dependency on US tech. What measures can we put in place to ensure our suppliers and third-party partners meet our security standards? Good question, that. I think that requires a lot more communication. It is about being really clear as to what it is you're expecting from a security standard perspective. It's about not just setting the bar, it's about helping people to achieve what it is you're expecting them to do. And the really important piece that I would emphasize there is tell them the why. Why do you have to do it? Why is it important? This isn't about people doing tick boxes. It is about people understanding why it's important and how they can help to maintain integrity and security across the whole supply chain. Last one that I've got time for, I think I've got about 30-odd seconds. What are some better reporting metrics to share with the board? You particularly mentioned metrics to be shared in the third-party space. Okay, reporting metrics to share with the board. Dead simple. What is important to your business? It will be operational, it will be revenue, it will be customer-based. You have to look at the metrics in relation to the strategy that the business is implementing, because that's what the board is really keen on understanding. So map your security metrics to the same metrics that the board is using for the business. And that, I'm afraid, is all I've got time for. If you're listening and you've got other questions, pop them in to me. Thanks very much for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more expert insights and thought-provoking discussions. But in the meantime, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. If you're interested in becoming an ISF member or continuing the conversation further, please do get in touch with me at steve.durbin@securityforum.org, or indeed get hold of me on LinkedIn. And remember, you can explore all our media and resources at our website, securityforum.org.